The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Welcome to the Home and Home podcast. We are taping this on a Tuesday afternoon live from Radio Row here at the Super Bowl. John, how are you doing?
I'm good. There's always the weird time of year, Ollie, where it's like I am, knee deep in draft stuff. You know, I jump into it pretty much when the playoffs start. But then as teams whittle out of the playoffs and there's less games, it's even easier for me to dive deeper into draft stuff. And there's less preview and wrap up NFL stuff to do. And then you've got the 2 week break before the Super Bowl. And so I'm all in draft stuff. And then I'm like, oh, wait, Super Bowl's this week. Yeah. So it's always like this pulling myself out of there. You're there. You've been able to be there in Arizona, which is pretty fun. Coming over, I know you're a little jet lag, but you're gonna power through this pod, man. I believe in you.
Yeah, I think it's let me check what time it is locally now. It's 11 a.m. whatever time zone this is. It's not Pacific, I know that. It's is it Mountain or something? It's one of the other unusual ones. I am already I'm three coffees deep already. The jet lag is severe. It was a 12-hour flight from the UK over to Phoenix, Arizona, but it's a fun time. We actually have a viewing party right now where people wanted to watch me and you do the podcast. I've had four or five people come up to me already saying, oh, I really love the pod. The pod is awesome. And it's like, great, cool. And then they said, can I sit and watch it happen in real time? I'm like, but you will only hear my side of the conversation. Maybe just download it in 2 hours when it's out. So I've tried to shoot people away. I don't do great broadcasting when people stare at me. We can dig into it. Where do you want to begin in terms of Super Bowl talk?
I guess we start with just talking about the injuries real quick, probably just to give people an idea of where things are at. It seems like the Chiefs are going to be close to full strength. I think it's today the first we got those weird injury reports that I don't remember from past years. Do you remember that where they like list the player as doubtful the first week, like before media day? I don't remember that in past years. Happening. I don't know if that's a new thing or
Nicole
Hardman was listed as doubtful.
Last night, Jerry Sneed confirmed he's okay. He's out of concussion protocol. Kadarius Toney confirmed he's okay and he's going to play. Now, how healthy, doubtful versus questionable versus all the little axioms the league uses to say someone's not fully healthy, I think they're all going to play. I would be really surprised. I don't think Mecole Hardman would be the most. If the Chiefs get to Sunday, with Mecole Hardman being the only real injury concern, that's a pretty big win for them coming out of what was kind of left of the roster after the AFC title game.
I agree completely. And the Eagles, I think they're looking at a pretty similar situation. It seems like even though we know some players like Lane Johnson and Landon Dickerson aren't going to be 100%, they should have most of their cast, it looks like. I don't think anybody of consequences hasn't been lost before the playoffs will be lost for this game. It seems like Hardman for the Chiefs, but it looks like Juju Smith-Schuster is going to play. Kadarius Toney's going to play. Legarius Sneed got cleared, so he should play. And obviously, the injury everybody will be looking at is the one to Patrick Mahomes. They won't be looking at the one with Jalen Hurts, but I do think that's one that, you know, he hasn't been 100% either. So it is going to be kind of an interesting footnote to this game, especially if either quarterback struggles, is just the injury issues and how that's affected things now in this contest. But I just wanted to start the pod by saying huge blessing. It seems like that we are going to get mostly both of these teams at full strength in the Super Bowl. So there will be very few asterisks.
And it has a chance to just be exceptionally fun. The bar for what this game could be with these two offenses is legitimately in play to be like just a complete shootout, as fun as football can possibly be. So I think we should just go through. We'll have a free open conversation, but we'll bounce through offense, defense, both teams, and kind of how they match on both sides of the ball. I think we should begin with the Eagles offense, because I think that side of the ball, Eagles offense, Chiefs defense, for me, really sets and will define the tone of the game of, is this an out-and-out shootout? And Mahomes is left saying, can I keep up against this pass rush, against this defense with limited pieces compared to what Jalen Hurts is working with? Or is it going to be a case where the Chiefs find some kind of answer and you bring the score level down. I find it tough to think that the Chiefs could go completely toe-to-toe with a 35-32 game or something like that. I think that they probably do need it to be a 31-28 style of game for them to win.
And then this matchup, there's a lot of compelling factors, I think, here. But number one, and where we usually almost always start, and where I think it's good to start when you're breaking down these things, is up front, because the trench play matters so much. We've seen it determine the outcome of the majority of games so far in the playoffs. It's outside of quarterback, where, and I do think there's a tightening up of things at quarterback in the NFL, where like you don't see these crazy games like you see in the regular season that often for quarterback play. It is a little bit more measured. It is a little bit harder to just, nope, quarterback's just going to put the team on his back and roll through the playoffs. Teams are too good. The coaches are too good. The schemes are too good. You usually need a little more components than that to be able to go all the way here. And you've got in this situation a offensive line in Philadelphia that is probably the best in football. They really don't have a weak link, and that's one of the best aspects of them, I think. You know, Lane Johnson's probably their best player, maybe Jason Kelce, but they really don't have anybody that's exploitable. And I've often said that it's great to have high-end players in the offensive line, but the best thing about an offensive line is when you have no weakness. Like if everybody's just rock solid to good, you know, that's better than having two great players, in my opinion, and then two bad players, or two players that are below average or average, you know. And so, and I don't even think, like, the way that Isaac Siamalu has impressed and has progressed throughout his career, the way that Landon Dickerson has made the leap in his second season, Jordan Mailata, obviously one of the, even though he started the season maybe not having his best year, one of the probably cooler stories in the NFL in terms of progress made by a player in short amount of time, developmental pieces. I've been unbelievable. And then obviously Kelce and Lane Johnson both should be future Hall of Famers. So you have five studs up front, and the depth is good as well. And then when you talk about tight ends being able to block, and they're capable there, and there seems like there's a lot that Philadelphia has at their disposal just in terms of pure player ability to be able to handle whatever's thrown at them. Now, the Eagles probably have the best scheme, probably the best group of pass rushers that we've seen, like in this game. But the Chiefs have the best player in Chris Jones. So where do the Chiefs deploy Chris Jones? How do they deploy him? How often do they deploy him in different spots is going to be key, where they could attack a ton of weaknesses in Cincinnati. That isn't necessarily the case. So their usage of Chris Jones in this game, I think, as a guy who we talked about last week, can move around a lot, has played on the edge in the past, actually was a full-time defensive end, and he has played reps out there. That is going to be one of the like underlying storylines of the game that I'm fascinated to look at.
Yeah, I want to get into Chris Jones in a bit more detail in just a little bit. I want to start macro with the point you made there about the Eagles' offensive line and just the general structure of what the Eagles do on offense. Because the thing for me, I went through almost all the Eagles' tape on that flight, John, that 12-hour flight I mentioned before. That was what I did. As I said, I watched all the Eagles tape. I have a problem. And the thing that just kept jumping out to me is when you face this Eagles offense, which just their base concept, if you just said describe in the macro what is the Eagles offense, you would say it's just a spread option zone offense, right? Now, they do a ton of other stuff too. But just in kind of the general abstract sense of things, the concern with them is the zone option plus the RPO, right? And when you face them, you come away thinking, well, the correct solutions to those base concepts, so if you just took the generic zone option, the generic read option, right? Five blockers, read the end, and you either give the dive or you keep the ball. Putting in the solutions to stop that stuff schematically, they have all the counters to wreck what would be the base construct, right? So when you face a traditional zone option team, you would say you want to close the B-gap bubbles, which is where all those plays are designed to attack, is the B-gaps. Mm-hmm. So you either put the bare front in right with the three guys, or you run some kind of hybridized front, which is what most teams have done this season, is let's have one front to one side and then one front to another side, and they play with a two-eye, essentially a shaded tackle. But when you do that against the Eagles, because they have these special players up front and they have the ability that very, very few teams at this level have, which is they can pull all five guys. So every single thing is in play, and their gap scheme concepts off the option are pretty much unlike what anyone else but Creed Humphrey can run, because their center is the best mover in the league. So you put the 2i in to say, we are going to solve the structural issue of facing the Eagles, right? And then Landon Dickerson just pins you and they fold Jason Kelce outside. And then even at the second level where you would say to slow down the read option, you run a scrape exchange, right? The perimeter linebacker dive bombs inside, and the inside linebacker folds around to take the to become the end man on the line of scrimmage and fill that gap, so that you muddy the read of the read option. Essentially, you give the read, you know, you give the keep read to the quarterback, and then all of a sudden there's a looper coming around to close him down. When they're able to pull a move, guys in space, particularly Kelce, where they will fold him inside one gap, right, or they'll fold them all the way to the end of the line of scrimmage, there's just no stopping that. And that is why I've said this to you time and time again, but they schematically have, I reckon, 10 concepts that are unstoppable, because there's only so much you can do X's and O's wise to kind of fit up against those concepts, particularly in the run game, particularly when you layer on the horizontal RPO and the vertical RPO. And there's just no solutions to those designs unless you can just wreck shop, which leads us again to that Chris Jones point. How do you think the Eagles will attack Chris Jones? Because they did some pretty interesting stuff against Nick Bosa. And what does Spags have to do to prepare for the fact that they can just freeze him out of the game, right? Some of their freeze option stuff, just leave him unblocked, make him put doubt in his mind. They did that against Micah Parsons really effectively in both matchups, which was just make him stand there and pat his feet. It's all well and good having the guy who's going to wreck shop, but on one play, we'll freeze him and read him and say, you just pat your feet, big man, and you're not involved in the play. And the next one, you make it look like he's frozen. This is what they did against Nick Bosa, and they would just crack him with a trap, right? They would just fly anyone from the other side of the line of scrimmage, and they can pull center, guard, or tackle. And Bosa was going, am I being the read man right now? Because they can flop the read too in the option game. That's a big thing. They can read both sides. And then he would just get absolutely walloped by a trap coming across. So I think for the Chiefs, when you only have one super duper star up front, this is the problem with these guys, is conceptually there's nothing you can do against them. And so you have that one player up front be the best player on the field, as we spoke about last week. And then conceptually, they can kind of sort of take one guy out. So the other guys are, I think, going to have everyone, like we did, has spoken about, Jones has to have an MVP type performance. And I still agree with that. I think he has to have two or three massive plays. But the more I watch the film, I'm like, well, they can just kind of freeze him out for 60% of the snaps, probably. And so those other guys now really have to come to the party.
And that's the interesting thing about Chris Jones, is that he is, as dominant as he is an upfield penetrating type of player. There is still this, I wouldn't, it's maybe harsh to call it a weakness, but like there is this aspect of his tape when you watch him that it's like, oh, you could still use that aggressiveness against him at times, and nobody will do that better than Philly, I believe, especially when it comes to being able to trap him or wham him, things like that. And I think he is obviously a load when it comes to pass rush situations, but as you said, you know, this is a team that what they'll try to do, I think, more than anything is that option game and get you thinking. And if there's one thing you want to do against Chris Jones, and this isn't meant to be disrespectful to him at all, but he is a wants to play fast, aggressive, get upfield, not have to read it, but just attack it type of player. And Philly is going to make you think. They just are. They're going to make you think up front. And it's going to slow down a little bit of what he's able to do, I think. I think it's going to slow it down enough that if the quarterback's able to execute, I don't think Chris Jones is going to be deciding this game unless the game gets out of hand on the other side and they're chasing a lead or something like that. As long as the game is manageable and the Eagles are able to run their offense and not get away from what they want to do, game plan wise, scheme wise, I think they're going to be able to handle him much better than other teams have. And so like you, I don't worry necessarily about one guy being able to blow up what Philly's done. This offense has been pretty foolproof all season long. We've talked about that at length. And the other aspect of this that's interesting is Chris Jones is a fine run defender, but that is not where he makes his money, you know, comparatively to other players. And there's times where he does even good things in the run game, but it's not we're making tackles for loss behind the line of scrimmage, backdooring a zone scheme or things like that. And he can get in and make a splash play, but there isn't the down to down consistency that you'd see from some of the like elite defensive tackles in the league. And he is obviously one of those as well. So if you wanted to attack him and take him out of a game and overwhelm him and get him off his game a little bit, starting by attacking him in the run game would be kind of a place that I would go to rather than trying to avoid him in that way. And you know, Philly's going to come out in this game and they're going to try to establish the run.
And I think there's two things Spags can do. So going through that Niners game again, they had a decent success when they stunted and twisted or ran some kind of games. Now, the issue they have is just where do they put Chris Jones? We haven't kind of touched on that because Lane Johnson will just gobble him up. Like, Chris Jones is all-pro player, has been the best interior defensive player in the league this season, and yet still, and but the value they've had all season is, as you said earlier, put him on the weak link. There just isn't a weak link on Philadelphia. And if you want to commit five guys down the front, particularly in passing downs, I just not sure that's going to be all that effective for them. Even if you can get one-on-ones across the board against Philadelphia, is that worth the investment up front when you don't think your guys can win one-on-one anyway? I'm not so sure. Maybe, personally, I think that the best thing to do when attacking the pass pro would be to put Chris Jones on Lane Johnson, hope he wins a couple of reps, and just leverage the threat of Jones to try and get help with everywhere else. The one thing I've been thinking about is running some kind of bigs on the same side formation when you put all the giant fellas to one side of the formation away from Chris Jones. You put Jones on Johnson, and then you slide down every once in a while the single mugger we always talk about next to Chris Jones and twist and game and stun off that to try and get someone who's just a bit twitchier against Lane Johnson to test out the groin and the abdomen injury. Does he want to sink and bend? Now, you go through the depth chart and you're saying, do the Chiefs have someone who is twitched up enough at the second level to get, because we're only really talking here about, can you score three negative plays, right? Can you get some pressure in Hurts' face to create some kind of chaos and a turnover? And you know these linebackers, is there someone twitchy enough where you can put in a stunt with Chris Jones where he can slam inside, he's such a load that it absorbs so much of Lane Johnson, and then you get the twitched up backer swooping in behind? Do they have that kind of player, do you think?
Well, this is where you'd love to say, you know, Willie Gay's that guy. I think obviously you brought him in for those athletic purposes. And, you know, even Nick Bolton, who's not a great athlete, I think there is some vertical explosiveness to him where moving in a straight line, like I think he could be effective in that way maybe. But yeah, this is we're going to talk about it probably a good bit, but the Chiefs linebackers, you know, how do they play in this game, whether it's in the blitz game or whether it's in coverage, you know, the compromise spots that this offense is going to put them in with the options and all that stuff for that they have to process. How do they handle that? Because it's been a maligned group at times, and they've looked for ways even to get Willie Gay off the field, and there was the suspension. And so Bolton has been one of our fair players to watch kind of progress this season, and then some of his limitations have shown up at times. But who they get involved in that action, what the Chiefs have been amazing at just finding players to just do stuff. Like Brian Cook making the play last week, it's just like, man, where are these guys coming from? Like, they weren't even contributors this year, and it just goes to show kind of late in the process you're seeing how they won the offseason and stuff. But I think you're gonna have to, like, those guys have to play a big role in this game, I think, for the Chiefs defense. Like, they're gonna have to be effective. Yeah. I don't think there's going to be any way to work around that with those guys. Now, how they use them is a different story. And like you said, if you can get them in the situation where you're using them more in the rush game, then I think that could play to their advantage. Hopefully make them attackers rather than guys that are always moving backwards in coverage.
The best game plan I saw against the Eagles this year was the Jags. The Jags in the first half, and then the Eagles, because they are so special, is they adjusted, and Mike Caldwell just didn't have a changeup to go to in the second half, and Spags, you would hope, could maybe pinch some of the stuff from the Jags early on and then would be able to, you know, read and react to the game in the flow as Shane Steichen and Nick Sirianni adjust. But what they did really impressively, but this is where it gets into your athletic conversation, right, is they had Trayvon Walker and Josh Allen. And that's just a different level of athlete to what the Chiefs can put on the field. But they did what I think many people have cried out for, particularly in like the scheme node world, which is, why, if you're facing what is essentially a college offense with really difficult to defend pro principles in the run game too, are you not stealing college style things on defense, right? Something we've spoken about before is the apex cover down, where you put the overhang defender between the slot receiver and between the tackle. And what you're trying to do there with a box in, box out defender is muddy the read for the quarterback in the option game, right? Is that guy in the box if it's a pre-snap RPO? Where is he going at the snap if it's a post-snap RPO? And it allows you, the most essential thing, more so in college, I guess, in the NFL, is you just get some body presence on that really quick fire, bang, bang, RPO pass play, where it's the snag, the glance, the slant, is you can have a big body collide with that receiver and take away that slant. So if you're giving whatever the read is, having that box in, box out defender helps. What the Jags would do is they would align the linebacker over the slot receiver. That's called a full cover down if you want to get the really nerdy parlance. But then at the snap, walk them into the apex slot. So not up to the line of scrimmage, but into the apex slot. And it frazzled Jalen Hurts a few times on whether to give it or whether decided to read it. And so he was giving the ball into a loaded box, not realizing he was giving the ball into a loaded box. Or if he pulled it, they could immediately bang, bang, collide the slot receiver. Now, the Eagles adjusted and just kind of eliminated that from the game, and they were just better than the Jags in the second half, frankly. But I think finding creative solutions like that, being a bit wild, being a bit wacky, is the best they can do. And what you do with that is you use Willie Gay, not as superstar Willie Gay, but as a chess piece to kind of mess with the rest of the read. And that's probably, to me, early downs, their best approach. My big, big concern is when you play with an apex cover down like that, what you essentially do is you say, on the back end, our safeties are one-on-one with the slot receiver. And then you look at the Eagles, because we're talking about the run game in the early down portion, right? The Eagles, for the most part, they want to throw the ball in early downs. They kind of throw to get ahead, and then they bludgeon you with the run to put the game away.
Right.
So if you're going to say one-on-one on an island, this is where, to your point earlier, I think these safeties for the Chiefs, and they play all three, by the way. Brian Cooks plays like 40% of the snaps at this point. I think they have to have the game of their lives, frankly, because I do think you have to do late walking, late movement, front stuff, stem, all that stuff, just to kind of mess with the Eagles' O-line. If you play one-on-one against them, or even if you have an extra hat, they will just maul you. So you have to get really creative in how you kind of mess up the reads and the run fits and the run reads for Jalen Hurts in the offensive line. But by doing that, and this goes back to my point before, that the correct structural solutions are a problem because they can do everything else at the highest possible level. And they're like rubbing their hands going, we can get Devonta Smith in the slot one-on-one with Justin Reed, and it's a 20-yard head start. Let's go. And that, to me, playing, you know, quarters match with that late movement is the correct approach. But you are then saying, maybe your best player, because AJ Brown can play in the slot, Devonta Smith can play in the slot, there are so many more varied route options in the slot, right? They are one-on-one with our safeties. And if you're the Chiefs, do you feel comfortable with Juan Thornhill and Justin Reed being one-on-one on an island, 15 to 18 yards off the ball against AJ Brown, Devonta Smith? And honestly, that's something that people can track early in the game. If Spags is moving those pieces around, the width of where he's put his linebackers, this will be off-screen, right, for most people, because how it's a one-on-one safety matchup 16 yards off the ball essentially. But if that's what they choose to do, you need to have those guys play the game of their lives, and that just feels like a tall order to me.
It does. I mean, and one of the most interesting things to track in this game will just be this Chiefs young secondary that has been kind of this upstart group and has flashed a lot, obviously, in the playoffs, made some huge splash plays. Can they keep doing that? And Brian Cook, I think, hopefully a lot is on his shoulders in this game, because frankly they need it to be. I don't think that their other safeties are going to be able to survive in those situations, and I don't know that Cook will, but I'm just saying, like, I think we've seen enough of Juan Thornhill in those spots before. I think we've seen enough of Justin Reed probably in those spots before. And again, no disrespect to them, they're not bad players, but I do think their limitations are clear on tape when they're being attacked that way. I think the ability to turn, find the football, make plays like that, not necessarily the best skill set for either of those guys. And in fact, I think sometimes their skill sets run into each other because of that. Like, neither of them, both of them are probably better true free safeties, and Thornhill can be inconsistent in that way, but it's what his like athletic and physical skills best suggests he can do. And so Cook is kind of this wild card anyway in the matchup, where it's like, we haven't seen that much of him, and what we've seen of him, you know, even just the play he made last week, you know, you don't want to put too much on one play, but it's like, this is an interesting player. And he made other plays in that game too, just being able to read and diagnose and process, come down, take good angles, all of those kind of things. So the football, his tackling was one of his highest marks in college, and I think it's continued in the NFL. And so all that to say, I'm the unknowns of the Chiefs secondary are catching people a little bit in these playoffs. And I don't know whether that will do that for Philly or not, but they were kind of this group all year. They didn't have Trent McDuffie most of the year. Brian Cook didn't really play. Josh Williams was playing, and now he's playing a lot less. And Jalen Watson, you know, is in this role now where he's playing every single snap of the game, and not everything's good, but he's making some splash plays here and there for sure. And McDuffie has been a revelation and come back and helped this team a ton. And so they're just a lot, and now Cook's a part of what they're doing as well. And having Snead healthy this week, we didn't play last week. And so there are a lot of, and Snead has also switched positions this season too. I should mention he was outside. Now he's back in the slot. And so there's just a lot of How's this team going to approach? And they have enough flexibility in their secondary to throw a bunch of different things at you with a bunch of different personnel. I do think, just as a final like side note here before I go back to you, is just that Snead is going to be a big part of this game plan, because he is a complex player that can play outside corner, inside. He can play in the slot. He can blitz as well. And I think that's going to be a part of this game plan if I'm Kansas City. I'm looking for ways to get him free shots, one or two in the game, a free shot at Hurts, whether it's manipulating things so that they're calling a protection going the other way. He is terrific, kind of like Mike Hilton, terrific at not showing he's sending pressure before the ball is snapped. And I think that can be a big part of this game if they can hit him once or twice, a free run at Hurts, and force a mistake.
100%. And I wouldn't even be that, you know, Spags is the great disguise guy. They'll disguise. And one thing they'll do from those looks we were talking about before in terms of kind of the preset formation is they'll move and rotate and try to buy themselves some times to maybe get some extra layers into the defense. So it's not a straight shot as you would play in college ball, where it's like a Smith on a Cook or a Thornhill. I will say, I think Cook, I mean, I loved Cook coming out. I think his diagnose and attack instincts from depth are pretty exemplary. I would want him on the field as much as possible. Now, he will maybe get cooked if you put him, no pun intended, if you put him one-on-one on the island against AJ Brown. It's probably going to be a house call. I accept that. But I think that in a one-off game, he has more potential to make a game-breaking play, which is, you know, reach the ball first, punch it in the air as he did it in the, oh, as he gathered in the Bengals game. I think that is more likely with him on the field, just because of what an instinctive player he is. And I would live with the downsides of, this is all we can probably do as a defense structurally to combat this thing. And if they cook us, they cook us. That they just have better players than us. That's just life as a coach, right? But he gives us a shot to read it and instinctively hit the ball before anyone else, or make a play on the ball. And so I would probably up the usage of Cook, and I would up the usage of three safety sets too. And maybe, to your point, with Snead as a blitzer, I really think the Chiefs have to go into this game with a mindset of, we cannot control the Eagles' offense. It's just too complex, too difficult to game plan for. We need two turnovers. We need at least three possession steals, even if that includes an onside kick or something like that, right? That they need to steal possessions. And so they're going to have to get creative in the blitz game. And with Snead, I don't think you need to even disguise the way that Mike Hilton does, where he's so special at lining up like he's not going to blitz and then come flying in from the slot. To the point we were making earlier about going to some of those big packages to try and isolate Lane Johnson and maybe try and stunt and twist around him, maybe if Willie Gay isn't that guy, maybe just use Snead in that package and invert one of your safeties. I think they could get pretty creative in what they can do from the secondary with their blitz package. If you watch what the Niners did, particularly against Hurts and the RPO, it was a lot of Hufanga, right? It was a lot of Hufanga attacking the backfield. They were trying to overload where the read point was. That was their approach structurally to trying to slow down the Eagles' offense. And that was another one where the structure was sound, it made a ton of sense, and they just got lit up because Dre Greenlaw had a disaster game, right? So maybe Spags looks at that approach rather than the Jags approach. I think those are kind of the two worlds he's got to figure out. Am I comfortable living in four down with a safety down there, or am I more comfortable living in four down and sneaking a linebacker in there? It's a big, big call to me, because by sneaking the linebacker in, shifting, it really comes down to, they have to choose in the vertical RPO game, where do they want the conflict point to be? You're either conflicting your linebacker or you're conflicting your safety. Personally, having watched the Jags game, I'd want to conflict my safety, and I would gamble on Cook having the game of his life. I wouldn't want to make the game be about, is Willie Gay reading and reacting to everything great? Because Dre Greenlaw's a really good player, and he had no idea where he was supposed to be for much of that Eagles game.
And, you know, Brian Cook played 27 snaps in the last game, and obviously you don't know how much he'll play in this one, but Thornhill played 66 and Reed played 65, and there were 66 snaps defensively in the game. So they're playing some with three safeties and doing some of that stuff. And so we'll see how much, if Cook plays more or less in this game, you know, that will be telling as well. But, you know, 25 of the snaps that he's on the field for were pass plays. And so he is there, basically using him in that specialized role, obviously, when in those pass obvious situations or 2 minutes or all those kind of things. And what he's able to do, those are also situations where you're going to get some probably attacking type route concepts down the field. And so what he does in those situations, I think, will definitely be telling. But just in general, the question you ask a lot about the Chiefs defense, I think, is do they have the talent? You're not going to ask this about Philly. We're going to talk scheme when we talk Philly, probably. And do they have the scheme to be able to stop what Kansas City does well? Because I think I have some concerns for Philly over there. But in this game, I think what you're asking with the Chiefs is, I think Spags can scheme up some things that will make it difficult, more difficult than other teams have. I think he's aware of kind of what needs to be done. My question is, what is the, like, do they have the talent? Because Philly's offense is a complete juggernaut. They have no weak spots in terms of players to attack. So there are very few ways to, like, say, oh, you're going to have a decided advantage in this. No, you won't have any advantage. Like, I don't think they're going to have a single advantage in terms of player talent. Like, as good as Chris Jones is, I just think there's too much strength along the Philly offensive line. There's no weak point. So I think you can make a play or two for sure in the game, absolutely. But down to down, play to play, you don't have an advantage in that way. So where do you win on the margins? You know, where do you win in terms of scheme and those kind of things? And that's where Spags, I think, has his work cut out for him. Is you're going to drop some good stuff, or players going to be able to execute at that high level? It's one of the reasons I think we could see high scoring Super Bowl, because I think on one side, I just wonder how these players will respond. These rookies and these young guys have played great, but this is the Super Bowl, and how long can they keep that going? It's not like they were great all season or heralded draft picks. You know what I mean, Ollie? Like, talent wise, like, there were questions coming in, and like, I respect the fact they played great. I've given them their props, but eventually, like, there's going to come a point where, like, unless they're ready, they're breaking out right now. Like, that point could come in the Super Bowl. And I just think that Philly has enough pieces to really expose you if you're not ready.
I just don't think that the Chiefs can think that they go in with anything that they can hang their hat on and say, we'll be consistent in this, because the talent disparity is just ginormous. So it is about, particularly in the blitz game you're talking about, there is 4 to 5 negative plays, 2 turnovers. That's the formula. And so how ballsy will Spags be in the blitz game? It's a big question mark, because then you're saying, McDuffie, you've got Brown. Let's go. And it's, as you said, I think McDuffie's been extraordinary for a rookie, and he completely transformed the defense when he came in. The whole thing took shape. And when you've got Snead and McDuffie, and he's played a lot of football now, so it's not quite like just dropping a straight rookie in there. That I'm comfortable with. It's the rest of the makeup, right? It's the fact that they're vets. That's more the issue, is the vets aren't the talent level you'd want them to be. The rookies are playing so above and beyond what you would expect of a rookie, and it's the vets where you're gulping and going, oh no. And then on the biggest stage, like you said, they kind of walk in just anticipating that the rookie corners are all going to play okay. It's like, okay, that seems problematic.
Right. It's definitely problematic.
I think just to finish, the Spags can only do so much in the disguise game. That is what I really believe, because it doesn't matter how much you change the pitcher on the back end, which is what he's so special at, right? Get to the same shell, change the pitcher. He basically runs what all these teams run on offense, right? It's just the same 7 concepts. We dress them up a bunch of ways. Spags does that on defense, all the crazy rotations and all that kind of jazz. I just don't think it's going to matter that much against the Eagles, because if you don't get pressure, it doesn't matter how much you change the picture. Jalen Hurts is still trust me, he's played a lot of defenses whose game plan has been, we have to be as crazy as possible because we can't play these guys one-on-one, particularly dropping into zones. And it's not mattered in the slightest. He giggles back there and he carves you apart. Or he just throws it over your head and lets Brown go moss your corner, right? He just doesn't care. So you have to create pressure. And if they cannot do it organically, he has to have 5 to 6 designer blitz pass that he is just selling out and saying, this is a drive-killing play, you know, after the first down completion, whatever it is, where he knows that this has a shot to get home. We will get a free runner, and then we just have to bring him down. Or like you said, is there a concern with the injury? Can he drive it beyond the blitz if there's a concern with the injury? He seemed pretty fine doing that against the Niners. He's had 2 weeks of recovery. He'll be shot to the gills with whatever they've got back there in the locker room, which, you know, for this game, I'm all for, because I want to see Jalen Hurts play really well in the Super Bowl. It's going to come down to me to Spags having to not be concerned with the down-to-down of it all and creating 4 moments of magic and chaos, which is what he is the best at. And that's where it gets really exciting, is I'm sure, having watched all that, I'm going, how on earth do you game plan against this? He's going to do something. I'm going to throw my hands up in the air and go, hey, he knows, because that's why he's Spags. That's why I'm sat on the podcast at Radio Row, and that's why he's putting another ring on his finger.
Yeah. Well, I think if you're Kansas City and you win this game, let's just say even just on the defensive side of the ball, if you're effective in this game on the defensive side of the ball, and this may be oversimplifying it, but I think it's because you found a way to impact the quarterback. And I don't think you're going to do that winning one-on-one battles up front. So you've got to find a way to impact and limit the quarterback. You know, obviously rushing wise, Hurts is going to get his to a degree, but, and this isn't meant to be disrespectful to Hurts, who I've heralded on this pod, said he's been great. But the reality is, like, he hasn't had to do much for this team to get here in the playoffs. That's not a knock on him. It's just the reality of how dominant the team has been and how bad some of the teams they've played have been too. It's been a combination of both those things, with the 49ers, you know, obviously losing Purdy, and, you know, the Giants being, you know, the Giants are fine, but not a huge challenge for them. So just has not much has been on Hurts' shoulders. And if you are the Chiefs defense, I think your number one priority in this game is trying to put a lot more on his shoulders and not let things get out of hand before he's had a chance. Will he be the hero? Will he consistently make the right moves? Will he consistently get the ball out on time, or will he try to play hero ball at times? If you are sending pressure at him, what is his response to that? And I don't think it's going to be winning one-on-one up front every single time. You mentioned Mike Caldwell, and Caldwell coming from the Bulls tree, obviously there in Jacksonville, and Bulls drawing up consistently good game plans against Jalen Hurts. They've limited him in the two times they've played him, two of his worst outings as a pro. And I know obviously he's made a big leap this year, and they didn't play the Bucs this season. And so there's not necessarily saying that it still holds water for him, but I'm saying Bulls has gone after him. He's made him uncomfortable. He sent blitzes from every angle you can do. He's mugged things up. He's, you know, again, he's complicated the picture for him post snap, especially, and made him make quick decisions. And that's been what's thrown Hurts off a little bit. And I think that if you're going to be effective in this draft, if I'm going to do that, just be like, oh, we got four guys, we're going to win that way, you'd love to be able to do it that way. It's not going to happen that way for them. They've got to find ways to do it schematically.
All right, then let's move to the other side of the ball. It's a slightly murky outlook, because the Eagles have had, by some distance, the best statistical season of any defense in the NFL. You look at them being first in adjusted sack rate, right? Everyone always says Super Bowl comes down to who gets the most pressure, as you said, who makes a quarterback uncomfortable, and traditionally, it's who gets home with a four-man rush. If you just look at those figures every season, the best team with a four-man rush and adjusted sack rate, you pretty much have your Super Bowl champion, right? And the Eagles are first by a long shot in that metric, right? 11.2% adjusted sack rate, and the second place in the league was 8.9%. So they are just outpacing everyone in terms of dropping the quarterback. But then you look at who they've played, and you start saying, well, they've not played anyone like Patrick Mahomes. And the big, big thing with Mahomes always is he is just totally immune to pressure. You have to drop Patrick Mahomes. His numbers when pressured are pretty much the same as when he's not pressured, and far outpace everyone in the league. And one of the most interesting figures with him is how good he is at avoiding sacks when he is pressured. He has, by far and away, the lowest sack rate to pressure rate, by far. And so I think he's at 10.2% in terms of pressure rate to sack rate. The next closest is 12%, and those are guys who stink and throw the ball away. And then if you go to any of the quarterbacks who are actually good in the league, it's about 15%. 15% is like a really, really good figure, because guys like Herbert, they want to hold on to the ball so they get pressured and they get rid of it before they're sacked. Mahomes is down at 10%. So you have to sack him. I think he's only been sacked on 6 times when he's been blitzed this season. So even when you scheme up free runners, or you say, we are sending everyone, this is the game plan, we know, we listen to the Home and Home podcast, we got to drop the guy, we send all the pressure, and it's like, we can't sack the guy. And if we press him, it's meaningless. So that, for me, for Philly, is the game plan, is dropping guys in coverage the way the Bengals have done the last couple of years. Is Jonathan Gannon going to be principle-led and say, I'm passive on the back end, and I'm going to trust these four guys, whoever I rotate in there, to go wreck shop? Or will he, as we said the other week, you know, maybe drop an edible, take a tab of acid, get a little bit funky, because they've not played anyone like Mahomes. And my fear with them, and with Gannon specifically, with just what his makeup is like, is that he will say, no, we're doing what we're doing, I trust our guys, and not have a curveball if necessary to be pretty creative in, I think, the zone pressure game more than the blitz game, to go after Mahomes.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I think that is where the game is. I don't even want to say won or lost, because I'm not sure that it's a losing strategy by Jonathan Gannon if he decides to do this, because he is so good up front. And they have blitzed a little bit more this year. He's been a little bit more creative, but it is not overwhelmingly, he is, he's like, we talk about the bottom of the league in terms of talent. Obviously, one of the best defensive players in the league, and Chris Jones, but they are closer to that in terms of game-changing talents. And the Eagles have studs everywhere, basically. And so it is, yeah, I think that is one of the key, especially at the key positions, right? Corner and defensive line. Like a lot of these positions, you can get by with other guys, you know, guys with certain skill sets at the other positions, but those positions really matter and they have game changers at those positions. And so because of that, he has been able to be more plain with what he's done and win football games. I don't think that means that, I'm not trying to like condemn him necessarily as a coordinator or anything like that. I'm just saying that is, he's been able to be successful that way. And let's be honest, they have not faced a lot of the best quarterbacks in the league during this run this season. Like they haven't. And so this is a totally different test than Brock Purdy and Josh Johnson and Daniel Jones. Like it just is. And I know they have played other games than that this season, but this is just next level type of stuff. And when they've played some of the, in the few games they have played with some of the top quarterbacks in the league, those have not necessarily been their best games defensively. They have been cooked up a little bit in some of those games, to be honest with you. And what's so interesting about this matchup to me, and this ties in, I think, with what you're saying, is that the Eagles basically want to force you to be very clean in your approach offensively, right? They're not going to give you big plays down the field. They're going to play two high safeties. They're going to rush four. They're going to be paid. They're going to wait. They're going to wait. They're going to wait. You're going to make your mistake. They're going to get their sack. They're going to put you in a long down and distance. They're going to come after you and get to you on the long down and distance. You can't convert against those because their talent's too good on the back end. They don't make mistakes and all of these kind of things. And the Chiefs of last year in the playoffs, that might have been a really good answer for them, honestly. They were making lots of mistakes. They couldn't find the deep ball. They were impatient a little bit. Ultimately got bounced. They made too many mistakes. And Mahomes was putting the ball in harm's way. It's just not the case this year. It's just not the case at all. Mahomes is extremely patient. He's getting the ball. He's accurate underneath. They don't need the big play down the field all the time. They're not hunting that. They can pick you apart and work their way all the way down the field without any splash plays. You know, under 10 yards, he's been incredibly accurate this postseason and this season in general. He's able to get away from pressure. Even with his injury last week, he was able to get away from pressure or get the ball out. There's just way more answers for the Chiefs than there have been in the past. So I'm worried about getting his group because I think he's going to do exactly what you said. I think he's going to come out and say, our guys are better than their guys. We're going to go after him with four, and we're going to drop numbers into coverage, take away the big plays, and we're going to force you to go the whole length of the field without making mistakes and without us getting your quarterback and all that kind. And Mahomes has not had a turnover-worthy play in the playoffs. Like, he has just been cleaner, smarter, quicker, more efficient, accurate than last year, and I think that those are all things that I would be pretty worried about if I were an Eagles guy.
I agree with you. You know, the thing they preach, to your point, is perfection, patience, and playmakers. That's like the three things that they hark on about, which is force them to be perfect, force them to be patient, and then bet on your playmakers in space. And that's great. And you can win a whole ton of games like that. And they've won a ton of games, and they could be overwhelming, and they might be overwhelming. You know, if they just blanket that receiving core of the Chiefs outside of Kelce, then, yeah, that could well work for them. What was interesting, I spoke to Nick Rawlis last night, the Eagles linebacker coach, and I was asking him about how they feel about setting up their rush to either contain Mahomes in the pocket or allowing him to escape. What kind of, they were thinking, where do they prefer him to be? And there was a real clear indication that they do not like him being in the pocket. And I asked him about, you know, some of the odd mirror stuff that I've written about before, which is these flush concepts where you set your rush to flush the quarterback. If you're terrified, as everyone is, of the quarterback breaking the pocket and going and making a play, the best thing you can do is set your rush so you know where he's escaping. You give him the alley, and then you just corral to that alley because you know where he's breaking the pocket to. And I asked Rawlis about this last night and whether or not they were going to include a number of the odd mirror stuff in the game plan and try and bait Patrick Mahomes, if they're rushing four, to break to a spot and then rally with their linebacking core. And he said he made a really interesting point where he said the teams they had studied who had run a lot of the odd mirror, now he didn't want to go into specific game plan stuff, obviously, but he had said the people they'd studied in general, he felt they had sacrificed more by doing that consistently than they actually gained on the one or two plays it was meaningful, which to me indicated they think that he is more dangerous now standing in there getting to 3 to 4 to 5. Because if you look at their route distribution this season, you know, Kelce has had the one or two monster games where he gets 16, 17 targets, something crazy. But for the most part, there was a great NFL Next Gen stat thing put out there where, you know, Tyreek used to subsume 30% of their air yardage share. Now it's down to 24% for the highest player. He is really, really distributing the ball and working really quickly. And so I, from what they were saying last night, I think there's a world in which they do bring more heat early on. Because if they're not willing to say, let's set up some of the odd mirror stuff, we think that's a sacrifice. That's you saying that just playing with four and hoping for the best is a bit of a concern, because we think if he stands in there, he might dice us. So I don't know. I have, like you, you know, Nick Rawls is not the DC. It's not his game plan. I have the concerns with Gannon too. I just hope that they have, you know, war gamed out for the idea that those guys don't win. Now, I think they will win. Now, the Chiefs line is really, really good too. They don't, you know, it's not the Eagles quite, but it's really, really good. But they have to be prepared for what do we do if he's just getting rid of it so quickly. And, you know, Reed and Bieniemy are so good at springing guys open through play design. What if he's just tossing the ball to guys wide open 7 yards down the field, and he's happy to play patient, perfect football, because he can play patient, perfect football, as he has done all this year. And when the playmaker part's there too, they have all the playmakers too, man. This is the Super Bowl. You know, they've got a ton of playmakers as well. So I just hope that they have a willingness to bring some really, really creative stuff if it's not getting home with four, and they don't just stick dogmatically to this philosophy they've embraced.
And that's, if you're Philly, you're banking on, to me, more than, well, maybe you are banking on Mahomes making a mistake or doing something like that. I don't think that's as likely to happen, but maybe you're banking on these receivers, you know, and them being the issue in this game. And the Chiefs receivers have been fine this season. Like, they've been good, they've been solid, but there is this reality that this is a Super Bowl and you're counting on Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who's coming off a heater of a game, to continue that in the Super Bowl. And you're talking about Juju Smith-Schuster, who has been a good, fine player this season. Kadarius Toney, who dropped a touchdown last week, and in general is just an enigmatic player, although he's obviously extremely talented. He could be the MVP of the Super Bowl, or he could be the GOAT of the reason that the Chiefs missed a huge opportunity, like he was last week. Let's put it that way.
He could score, you know, a 75 yard.
These kind of guys.
Yeah, Toney could score a 75 yard touchdown or have the game losing fumble on like the third snap of the game, you know?
Yep. Yeah, exactly right. Like, there is absolutely any outcome with him, I would not be surprised by. And so, yeah, if you're counting on those types of guys, and, you know, does anybody fumble? Does somebody drop another touchdown like last week? You know, those kind of in a game that I expect this to be close. I expect it to be high scoring. I expect opportunities like turnovers and things like that to swing this game for sure. Because I don't think any unit will dominate any other unit, like defensively, at least. I don't think either unit's going to be dominant in this game. And so, yeah, I think you need those skill players to be at their best or be good at least. And obviously the great equalizer would be Travis Kelce in this game for Kansas City. And that, yeah, you could say all that about everybody else. How do you stop Travis Kelce? Like, is there a way, Ollie? Like, they're talking about these made up routes that he runs and Mahomes knows, and the fact that he has all this freedom and flexibility and it's impossible to double him and all these different things. Is there a way to, like, even slow this guy down? Have we seen a good scheme for it? Have we seen anybody come up with any answers, especially this year where the Chiefs receivers have wideouts haven't been as good? Is there any path, you think, if you're Jonathan Gannon, to like tweaking something you do to be able to defend Travis Kelce differently than other teams have?
I don't think so. You know, the Bengals, to be fair to them, you know, everyone says about doubling Travis Kelce, they ran 87 double all the time, which was basically one man free in the middle of the field, and then you doubled 87, and then you just hope for the best. You put your hands to God and say, please, everyone else win. They did that. As you said, what is so different about the Chiefs, and I mentioned this in the pod last week, is that Bieniemy and Reed know all your rules. And so through formation and alignment, and the thing that Gannon has that's an issue, which is why I want him to be a little bit frisky and change some of his stuff, is it's the most rules-based defense in the league, right? Their trips checks, their split backs, every single check is really, really dogmatic. Sean Syed wrote for us all the rules on my Substack. Right, so Reed and Bieniemy know exactly what it is, and not only do they know your rules and then know how to manipulate them and how to break them, which is what they did even when Lou was trying to run double teams against Travis Kelce. They would get into like a one by one stack, they would do the short motions up, and short motion typically in the Chiefs offense is a complete, like, oh, we don't like the pre snap picture, so we're short motion just to change it ever so slightly. Usually to attack a rule, because we know that their stack rules are different than whatever we came out in and what they showed us in the pre-snap picture. These routes on air won't work versus those rules, but if we change it to a stack and they have to check, we think that we've got a chance. That's how they do things. It's very, very on the fly with these guys. Then you have the part you're talking about, which is they'll call a route that's, you know, Travis Kelce on a snag, and he's like, yeah, no, once I got out down the field 6 yards, that wasn't going to be open, so I'll just move to where I'll be open and Patrick will find me. So it's just not possible. And what was interesting in the Bengals game was, they, after the Bengals kind of did the in and out double on him. They put him on way more runaway routes, which is basically we want to get him catching the ball on the move about 10 yards down the field. And I do think against the Eagles, who I imagine will put a ton of depth in the defense, as you said, kind of compress the field in the short area of the field, try and take away easy throws, but they'll have a big gulf between the secondary and the linebacking core. That is what you want to try and hope for and hit if you're the Chiefs, I think. And taking that away for the Eagles has very little to do with coverage or any kind of checks, and is just pure about can we get home before Mahomes finds him? And if we're able to bracket him deep down the field, where else is he going with the ball? And as he goes through 3 and 4 and check down, can we get home there too? So I just don't see a world in which they're going to be able to take him out of the game. It's more, does he do enough damage, or can you make it a 16 target, 10 catch, but not quite effective game, right? Not 4 or 5 game breakers, and more like just efficiency. And if anything, we're happy with him getting the ball, because that meant Patrick turning down an option 2 or 3 that could have come open that would have maybe been more effective.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. I'm can't wait to see it. I mean, I'm just pumped. In general, how they match up with him is fascinating to me too. Like, just what player to use. Since Chauncey Gardner-Johnson came back from injury, they've basically been like, hey, you're going to play in the slot, rather than him playing deep, which he was early in the season. And obviously in the Saints tenure, he was playing more in the slot. And so he's kind of back in that role now. And, I think that could be like the heavy, I mean, think about just the mentality about those players, like, yeah. Absolutely will never get punked. Like, neither player, like, they just have no desire, like, play with a ton of swagger, ton of confidence, ton of chippiness. Like, I think Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is going to try to get under his skin and try to irritate and try to get him commit penalties, things like that. Like, I think that's going to be his approach. And I think it's going to be the approach of many of the Eagles defenders, but it's just going to be fascinating to see if that stuff works and how they're able to defend him just in general. And I think Gardner-Johnson his name became popular because of a maker for sure, down to down, play to play. I think he leaves some things to be desired, especially if you're going to ask him to play a man coverage. I don't think that's necessarily his strength. And so, yeah, I'm totally fascinated by the individual matchups on this side. Where the other one, I'm fascinated by the scheme when the Eagles have the ball. Like, how does Spags attack this juggernaut that we've seen just tear through the league this season? I'm really interested in how, okay, I think the Chiefs are pretty talented on offense, even if you say their wide receiver room is pretty decently average. I just, the game types of these players working against each other, I think it's going to be really, really good theater. Okay. Sounds good.
And that's the thing that makes it so exciting is that you have, I mean, in no world would anyone claim that the Chiefs are as talented as the Eagles, right? This is not as talented a roster. Now what they have is a really, really good offensive line, a all-time quarterback to tight end combination, and an all-time tight end, all-time playmaker, and then the quarterback of his generation. And then they've got the chaos maverick mad wizard on defense. And that's what kind of levels the playing field, is that we're all going in, I think, saying the Eagles are front to back, both sides of the ball, a better team. Every department, essentially, they are more talented than the Chiefs. But we all know that this quarterback is so special, this offense has been so prolific all season, that he could just have the game of all games, and this could be one of the legendary Montana Brady-type Super Bowl performances. And it would be almost silly to bet against Patrick Mahomes. I still believe the Eagles are the better team, and I think that will win out. And I think not being able to have answers on defense, what the Eagles do, and the fact they can probably control the flow of the game more with what they do on offense, is a decisive factor. But as good as the Eagles' defense is on paper, and as well as they've played this season, it's the Gannon to Mahomes thing. It's the Gannon to Mahomes thing. It's them saying things like last night that they don't necessarily believe in that odd mirror world, which is exactly what I'll be trying to do, which is saying this guy has been so effective all season, and maybe they, they're just bullshitting because they don't want to give the game plan away, but he's been so effective standing in and delivering all season that I would say, why don't we try and tease him into embracing some of the jailbreak stuff? And he still does it, enough, and he does it at the highest level still when he does do it. I would be trying to force him to break out all the time and turn it into backyard football and hope for the best. I don't want him standing in there and delivering. That would be my preference if I was the Eagles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think points are well taken and well said. A couple just footnotes that I wanted to kind of add in this game, that I don't know, the two things I don't know we're talking that much about. I think the Chiefs' ability to run the football, their MO, even the Eagles, we said, as much as they might run it, they pass, set up the run. That's really what they do in the game, and especially in early downs, and they're smart about when they do it. Both teams are smart about when they deploy the run. You hardly ever hear us griping about, oh, they're spamming the run on first and things like that. They're smart about when they deploy the run, and they're effective when they deploy it. The Chiefs were 10th this season in rush EPA, but on first down, when they did run the football, they were, I believe, second in the NFL in EPA per rush this season. So they have a good sense of when it's smart to run the ball on all downs, but especially on first down, which I think aids that ability to piece things together, right? If you are going to run the ball on first down, obviously they don't do it that much. Neither of these teams do, but when you do it, it has to be effective when you do it. And the Chiefs, both these teams have obviously found a way to do that. But I think the Eagles, everybody expects it. The Chiefs has kind of crept up on people. They've run the ball well, especially in the playoffs. Like, Pacheco has been a difference maker for this team in a good way, and that's an interesting part of this. The other thing I'll say about the Chiefs offense, fourth down, they're amazing at it. They've converted like 81% of their fourth downs this season, but they've only gone for it like 11 times. It's like 27th in the NFL. They like hardly ever go on, oh, this is fourth and specifically 3 yards or less. They pass on 9 of those 11 times. So they're putting the ball in Mahomes' hands. They're asking him to cook and create things. And oftentimes it is a schemed up play. Obviously they love those shovel passes and things like that. But I think in this game, you're going to have to see Andy Reid. I trust Andy Reid more than any other coach in this game, but the game management situation stuff in a game that I expect the margins to be razor thin. How does he treat those situations? Is he going to be aggressive on fourth down, more aggressive than he's been this season, knowing that this is the Super Bowl? This is going to probably, I think, going to be an offensive battle, and you have the best quarterback in the league, Patrick Mahomes. Like, how are you going to treat that in those situations? Are you going to be aggressive in fourth and 3 yards or less? Because I think we know Sirianni will be. Now, maybe he goes away from his nature, but we go into this game confident that Sirianni will be looking for those edges and will be finding them in terms of his game management. If there's one thing I worry about with Andy Reid, is how does he manage the game in those situations, whether it's red zone, 45 yard and in, opponent side of the field, fourth and 3 or less, fourth and 5 or less. Heck, like, I don't care. Like, this Patrick Mahomes we're talking about. I think he's got to be the more aggressive coach, or as aggressive as a coach, to give the Chiefs the chance to win.
I 100% agree. It reminds me of Belichick in that Eagles Super Bowl when he kept banking that at some point they'll slow Nick Foles and he wouldn't go for it on fourth down. It's like, at some point you got to read the room and read the game. And I mentioned earlier about stealing possessions, like an onside kick, a shump, you know, something, just something, going for two after the first touchdown, just to change the math of the game. You know, that is the kind of thing I think you should be looking at. He should be saying, I have Michael Jordan in 1996 and I'm putting the ball in his hand every single time. That's what this comes down to. And any chance I can get to try to get the ball back to him, whether it's sending the house to force a turnover, whether it's getting an onside kick, whatever odds I can tilt to get him the ball for as many possessions as possible, that has to be the game plan. If we win 50-48, that's good. We win. You know, that's what I think Andy Reid's mindset has to be. We'll see. One big shout out I'll give to Andy Reid, to the point you mentioned before, is them committing to Isaiah Pacheco early in the season when he was not playing well, when he was misreading a ton of things, when he was a disaster in pass pro, all for the fact that he knew, look, we're going to be playing in January, and we might see all the drop eight stuff the Bengals ran last year. And I believe in balance to really help the efficiency of Mahomes when he has to throw the ball rather than having him drop back 60 times a game. And it's paid off for them. As you said, first down run rate is through the roof. Now they face an Eagles defense who has struggled stopping the run all season. They've been pretty excellent, to be fair, since about week 12. I think they're 7th in EPA per play if you include the postseason. So, but that's still tilts ever so slightly towards the Chiefs, and I do think that they're going to have to try and run the Eagles out of those two deep looks. And if you do that, that's when Mahomes is really cooking with gas, because if they have to spin down every single snap, that they won't do, because they just don't do that philosophically. But if you can force them to do that on early downs, where you can then up the early down pass rate, that could be pretty pivotal to the game. Before we go, do you want to do some prop bets? Do you want to rapid fire through some of these props?
Do we want to say who we think is going to win too?
Yeah, let's go with that first.
We've kind of indicated. You have, at least, anyway. I don't know if I have. I actually am picking the Chiefs to win this game. And for two simple reasons. We don't have to rehash everything we just talked about, but I think Patrick Mahomes is just, I trust him more than Jalen Hurts, and I trust Steve Spagnuolo more than Jonathan Gannon. And it comes down to those two things for me. If I believe Andy Reid and Nick Sirianni can be a push, then I believe that Spags has that advantage and Mahomes has that advantage. And those are the biggest factors in the game to me, those three factors. Now, there are certainly other factors that absolutely matter, and most of them are going to go in Philadelphia's direction for sure because they're more talented at other places. But I just think that I think Kansas City has two advantages in that way that I'll trust them, even though I don't think – I'm not saying I don't think Mahomes will throw for 400 or that Spags will completely shut down the Eagles' offense, but I just think there will be enough from those guys to be better than what Hurts and Gannon do.
Yeah, all week so far I've said Eagles 31-28 because I'm defaulting to who I think is the better team. And every time I say it, there's like a brain fart and a hiccup because I'm like, why am I doing this? What am I doing? Why am I picking against Michael Jordan in his prime? What is happening? You know, it's like I'm going, you know, but Karl Malone and those teams, that's a really good team. That's a great team. You know, they move the ball, they swing, they hit the open shot. It's like, yeah, but they have Michael Jordan, man. You know, to pick Michael Jordan every time and you're probably going to do pretty well. I'm taking the Eagles slightly and I feel not good about it at all because, you know, I adore Spags and I think Mahomes has just taken his game somehow. I mean, there's absolutely no hole in his game in the slightest. Anything that was ever even not a concern, but was like, he's not a 10 out of 10. Now he's like, yeah, I'm a 10 out of 10 now in every single category. So, I will feel buffoonish on Sunday evening when he's picking up another Super Bowl MVP award, but I will take the Eagles as my official pick.
Okay. Yeah, sounds good. There we go. I like that we're divided on it. I think it's good because we can both easily see the outcome where the other is right. But I like that it's going. But I think it's going to make up for the championship round. Let's put it that way. High scoring, explosive, exciting.
So let's rattle through some of these prop bets quickly. MVP. Right. Who do you have? We know who the main ones would be. Right, it's Mahomes, Hurts. Obviously, the storyline guys. Is there an outside? Outside a favorite person you've kind of got your eyes tabbed on as could be the MVP? It's usually if a defensive player makes a crazy play is like how you steal it away from a quarterback.
I think Hassan Reddick has a storyline going for him. Obviously, I'm going to probably pick a Chief if I go in the Chiefs direction. I think Hassan Reddick has a storyline direction kind of going for him here, building here. I mean, he's been one of the best players in the playoffs so far, and through two games he's been a huge difference maker, obviously, regardless of what you want to say about the players that he's beaten for sacks. The reality is that the box score looks good for him, and I think he's obviously played well too. And so I think he could be one of Philadelphia wins. If Kansas City wins, I'm going to go Kadarius Toney, just going in line with what we said before, like, because it can only take two touches, but he could change the game. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I'll go with a player like that.
That's a great one. There's also like a Sky Moore return, you know, return to completely flip the game is one you could look at. If you're trying to, you've got to build paths to like the victory for that. The Hassan Reddick shout is amazing. You know, Chris Jones was the one I was on earlier, like, oh, he has to win MVP if they're going to win the game. And the more I watched the tape, I was like, oh, but I think they can eliminate him for a lot of the game. Though still, if he has two or three game-changing moments, then he could win it. But Aaron Donald didn't win it, and he was the most game-changing defensive player we've had in modern football in a Super Bowl. He literally won the game for them, and they didn't get the award. Yep. So I think Reddick is a great shout because it would be if Mahomes didn't play great, maybe people would look at the defense, and you can already envisage the strip sack fumble to decide the game. I can already see that in my head. So I think Reddick is an unbelievable shout to win Super Bowl MVP. If you're in on the Eagles, obviously Hurts has the storyline, but what you're saying there is that they were able to stop Patrick Mahomes, and there has to be a moment when you stop Patrick Mahomes. And so I think Reddick is a great shout. Couple of other of the there's a really fun one that is, you know, there's always the over under on the national anthem. People love that one. What BetMGM I think has done this year, which is a wonderful companion to that, is the first scoring drive of the game over or under the length of time of the national anthem. So you have to kind of loads of maths in your head of, okay, so I think the national anthem is going to be like, what, 2 minutes, 2:17? Who's going to get the ball first? Well, the Chiefs would have to drive the length of the field. I'm going to go no on that one, but I think it's an intriguing thing to track. You got to get your stopwatch out for both the national anthem and then keep your stopwatch out for the opening drives.
I think the opening drive will be longer. I think it'll result in a score, but I think it'll be longer than the national anthem.
Okie doke. Okay, let's look through. Okay, here's another couple of ones for you. Let's do some quick football ones, then we'll do some non-football ones. Will there be a successful two-point conversion, John? Yes is plus 200. No is a heavy minus 275 favorite.
I'll say no.
I'm going to go Yes, because I think Sirianni is a crazy cap, and I think that on their opening score, he could say, "Let's go for two now," and really flip this.
Yeah, probably the best two offenses in the NFL at those situations. I don't even know the numbers. I'm just schematically in red zone packages, and I'm just thinking probably really effective in those situations.
Definitely the two most terrifying. Like when they say they're going for it, you're like, oh shit, we're not going to stop this.
Yeah,
Most receiving yards in the game. Most receiving yards in the game. The favorites are, of course, Kelce, A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith. Dallas Goedert plus 775 is an interesting one. If you've got Tony on MVP, people, you got to double up and get Tony on the receiving yards, right?
Probably, yeah. It could come on a rush too, I guess, if you're thinking about him. But yeah, most likely you're right. It coming a receiver. So he'd be the sleeper there, I think. I think AJ Brown's gonna have an awesome game. He's been a little quiet in the playoffs. I think he's gonna have an awesome game.
Another excellent shout. Okay, let's move to some of the fun ones. We're gonna go now to Rihanna. The halftime show. Very excited, John. I'm very excited to see Rihanna's return to music. I'm going to be there in person and watch the halftime show. I'm very, very much looking forward to it.
You're a big Rihanna fan.
Big Riri head. Big Riri head. The one times I'm not watching film, you know, I'm just cranking the Riri tape. This is to occur, and I only really want to note on one here, but this is to occur during Rihanna's halftime performance is what the name of the prop is. And there's all things like, will she wear a bucket hat? Will she announce if she's pregnant? Will Jay-Z appear? What stands out to me? This is fascinating. This is one of those Vegas knows stuffs things, right? Vegas knows things. That's why their buildings are so tall. Rihanna to confirm that her lyrics were censored by the NFL. Is a minus 105 favorite. It's odds on that somehow, whether through talking, bear in mind, people, they pre-record they lip sync they film it in the day, the backing track basically, and then they play it so you can't do a political statement during the Super Bowl. So she would have to somehow confirm she was censored without speaking, and that's a favorite, and that's ahead of the fact she would open an umbrella when she's gonna obviously do a song with fake rain called Umbrella. So I prepare yourselves, people. Vegas knows stuff.
I don't have a take on that, but that is, I actually might. I usually don't even care to watch that. I don't care at all. People like can't wait for halftime show. I usually just never watch. I don't care, but I might have to watch to see if that happens now.
Well, yeah, if she does something wild, we could have a delayed second half. So you're gonna have to keep your eyes peeled on this one. It could change flip the script, like when Beyonce turned the lights out. Number of beers sold. Over under 120,000 beers sold at Super Bowl in State Farm Stadium. And I will say, just to help you out, the capacity of State Farm Stadium is 63,000, which means you're looking at two beers per head. Lots of research went into the Home and Home podcast this week, John, as you can see.
It's got to be over then, right? Like, it has to be, because two per, even if a lot of the people in the stadium are drinking, there's gonna be so many people that go four or five, right? Unless they have cutoffs. I don't know if they've got. I'm going over.
You dare to tell the Eagles fans there's a cutoff? Are you kidding me? No chance. The only way you would go under here is that there's so much corporate seats, there's so much non-fan seats at the Super Bowl that it kind of messes with the metrics a little bit. If it was any other team but the Philadelphia Eagles, those guys will go 10, 11, 12 deep. There's a halftime show that puts 45 minutes extra on the game, guys. So they are smashing the over on that one.
Well, I think also maybe it plays the advantage, right? There's people there that really don't care who wins, so they're just looking to have a good time, and maybe they're trying to throw back a few more extra. Plus, everybody who goes is affording insane tickets, so the price of beers being insane isn't going to matter to them at all. Like, they're the people that are rolling it, so I think I'm going over for sure.
And there's also a world in which there's a blowout, and so you're just bored for, you know, the final quarter, and it's like, you know what, let's just go crank it until the end of the game. Okay, last one. The famed. What color will the first liquid be poured on the game-winning coach? I will let you know that lime, green, yellow, clubbed together, is the favorite, which I think indicates they think that the Eagles will win. Orange is the second favorite, and I have done my tape study, John, and I know that Andy Reid, whenever he wins big games, gets dunked in orange Gatorade. So if you are on the Chiefs, roll with orange. That is their good luck charm during big Andy Reid games. You can also get purple.
I was actually going to say orange, so that's perfect.
Oh, there you go. You're going to say orange. So you can also get purple, red, and blue, but you're going with orange for Andy Reid and the Chiefs.
Yeah. Orange. Yes, orange.
All right, then. That'll do it for this edition.
Boy, I have one. I have one more.
Go on.
I have one more. Over under Ollie Connolly tweets during the Super Bowl. one and a half.
Wow, you can buy the hook. I like that. 1.5. I would have set that a 0.5. Will he tweet?
Well, I just think it's the Super Bowl. You're not like the halftime show even counts. Like all this stuff. You're not going to have one take during the Super. I'm just over under 1.5 for the Super Bowl from the pregame, from an hour pregame. Let's put it that way, from an hour pregame until the end of the postgame, like on field session. I mean, just everybody's getting I'm just wondering, is it going to be over or under?
Yeah, I could tilt the Vegas scales on this one. You know, if Vegas really did their research, they would know that Ollie Connolly during games tweets like zero times. But if Spags is involved, it's like 45 tweets of just me like lathering myself in Spagsness. So, yeah, Spags is going to have to do fun stuff to win the game. And so I will just be having a meltdown online and in person watching what Spags does.
I think I'm putting it over. I believe you're going to pull out more than I think you're going to have two or more tweets during the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you believe in me as a content creation machine. I'm sure that, you know, now I work for this big media company. Someone will probably tap me on the back, the shadowy figure, and say, hey, man, you know, for the Super Bowl, could you please do some social engagement? So, yeah.
Hey, if that happens, I'll take the win.
All right, man, this was really fun. I cannot wait for this. This is gonna be a blast. Yes. I really, really believe that it's gonna be an all-time up and down score fest, which would just be the most fun with one of the DCs doing something really cool or a player just having an outrageous moment. A Reddick, you know, what's great about this is to decide the game, as always in Super Bowls, the best players have to do something magical, and so it's I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I can't wait. I think it's gonna be everything we hoped that the last two games would be and more.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.